This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Nothing is off limits as host Sophia Franklin dishes on her personal life, like toxic relationships, dating and hookups, and dealing with insecurities, all with humor and real talk. Find Sophia with an F on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03, Tuesday afternoon, November 26th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. The Bears have come to an agreement with school districts on taxes for its property in the northwest suburbs. We'll cover that in our next segment, but right now, reports on the housing market and consumers highlight today's data. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Paul Christopher, head of Global Investment Strategy at the Wells Fargo Investment Institute in St. Louis. Paul, thank you for joining us today. And let's take a look at the report on new home sales plunging to a two-year low. But we can blame the weather for the numbers in this most recent report.
Yeah. Hi, Rob. Nice to be back with you. Yes, weather does play a role. And when I look at the chart of these new home sales, the latest month does stand out to the downside. New home sales have been kind of flat around 700,000 on a seasonally adjusted annualized basis. This time we got about 610. So that trend is still pretty flat. New home sales are a support for the housing market. The real problem in housing is that people aren't selling their existing homes.
And if you break it down by region, the South, new home sales fell by nearly 30%. So, of course, that would make sense with the hurricanes that wreaked havoc in both Florida and North Carolina. But new home sales rose in the Northeast by 53%. But even then, that's kind of a drop in the bucket.
Yeah, that's right. New home sales represent only about 10%. Of total home sales across this country. The bull in the china shop here is the existing homes. And if you look at the mortgage rates today, and someone who paid 2.5% for a mortgage 3 or 4 years ago, that person doesn't want to sell and then have to buy another home at a 7.5% mortgage now.
And then speaking of existing homes, I think one thing a lot of homeowners have enjoyed doing over the past couple of years, especially if you manage to lock in a low interest rate on that 30-year mortgage during the COVID-19 pandemic, is look at your home appreciation, maybe get an appraisal and just find out how much net worth you're living in right now. But it seems like the pace of home values and home prices appears to be leveling off.
Yes, but at a very high level. Houses today are more expensive than I've ever seen them. And it's that way in some of the data too, record highs in some of the different home price series. And again, it just has to do with a lack of supply. You've got 20 and 30 somethings now starting to look for homes, starter homes, maybe some of them with kids, but they can't find anything because the older folks don't want to sell on account of having to pay a higher mortgage rate if they do move and have to take a new mortgage. So it's that limited supply that's pushing prices higher.
And then consumer confidence jumping to a 16-month high as Americans see the economy improving, rising stock market values and slowing inflation fueling optimism about next year. Now, Paul, there is a chart that's making the rounds online. This might have been the Consumer Sentiment Survey that showed that Republicans' assessments of the economy took off after November 5th, and Democrats were pessimistic all of a sudden by equal measure. The Conference Board, did they kind of smooth out political perceptions when coming up with the consumer confidence figure?
That's an interesting question. I mean, it's not unusual after an election for the party that won to have its voters be very happy, and the party that didn't win have their voters be very unhappy and think negatively about the economy. But I'm not aware of any sort of weighting that's done by political party here. And more to the point, I think, if you look at consumer expectations, part of the same survey, they ask people, what do you think about the next 6 months? And that's been trending higher now for a whole bunch of months, for like half a year. So I don't think this is just a political phenomenon. I think people are seeing that inflation has come down and wage growth now is providing more of a cushion against inflation, above inflation, so that people have some purchasing power. And then with interest rates coming down, that's going to also make credit more available. We think that's a big part of what's going to drive a stronger economy and better equity performance even next year.
Paul Christopher, head of global investment strategy at the Wells Fargo Investment Institute in St. Louis. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up, a property tax agreement for the Bears property in Arlington Heights.
This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
The Bears have settled tax disputes involving the former Arlington Park racecourse site. Let's see what it signals with Mark Gannis, president and co-founder of Sports Corp Limited in Chicago. Mark, thank you for joining us today. And going back to maybe last year when the Bears re-engaged the city about possibly building a new stadium either next to Soldier Field or elsewhere near the Central Business District downtown, there was some belief back then that was merely designed to put some pressure on Arlington Heights and Northwest suburban officials to get a property tax deal together for the Arlington Park Racecourse site. At the end of the day, does it look like that take was correct?
No, I don't think so. The Bears were very, very focused, still are, on being in the city of Chicago. That's why they've expanded the potential sites, not just to the lakefront, which was their preferred site, but also now to the Michael Reese site, which they're now taking a hard look at again and seeing whether things could be done with the rail tracks there that might allow the stadium to fit in that site. So no, I don't view this that this was, you know, a cynical effort at leverage by the Bears. I think the Bears are still focused on the city of Chicago. What they ran up against are things that are very difficult. $2 billion of public money to go into it, which includes $1.5 billion for infrastructure on a park that already exists. The lakefront protection ordinance. These are really difficult things to get over. And so they've always kept open Arlington Heights as a possibility. They own the land. They paid for all that land out there. So I view this as the Bears moving things forward on parallel tracks, but still preferring to be in the city location.
Now, from my observation, and I think a number of other Bears fans have said this as well, that Arlington Heights, building the stadium there on land that you own, and then by privately financing it in a stadium that you own, is the shortest distance between two points. And if they just committed to Arlington Heights when the announcement was made in 2021, a stadium could be taking shape right now. What makes public financing and all of the headaches that go with trying to secure public financing more attractive to any sports ownership group above and beyond the Bears?
Well, first, I actually agree with that statement about the shortest distance between two points. And Kevin Warren made a point in his press conference that every year that this is delayed is very expensive, both in terms of additional construction cost and in terms of lost revenue to the Bears as well. So that point was a very good one, and I think it's completely accurate. Now, the question as to why, you know, some of this has to do with legacy. You're in the city of Chicago. You are called the Chicago Bears. That vista, that picture of downtown Chicago from the lakefront with Soldier Field, and it would be the same if it were the Michael Reese site, adds some real value and economic impact to the region. So it's actually completely understandable why the Bears would make this such a high priority. But the time will come where time and certainty override those preferences unless something in the near term can be done to advance either of the two downtown sites.
And then the Bears aren't the first professional sports franchise to explore using a racetrack as a site for a football stadium. I mean, they George Halas actually kicked the tires in the Arlington site in the 70s. And then the Rams are currently on the site of a former racetrack in Los Angeles. I mean, just having all of that land available to you and you're right there on an expressway and you are have a metro line that stops at the front door and you can own the land to develop as other sources of revenue. Once again, like at the end of the day, does Arlington Park just become so attractive that, you know, 10 years from now, we're talking about the Bears playing in Arlington Heights?
Well, I think the probability is Arlington Heights because of the certainty associated with it there versus the uncertainty of the potential plans for downtown. But, you know, there's that old Daniel Burnham line, you know, make no little plans, dream big. This is making no little plans. So you got to give the Bears credit for putting time and money behind trying to get it done in the city. But politics and financial economics and infrastructure costs being what they are, Arlington Park is still, in my mind, the higher probability of all the sites.
Mark Annis, president and co-founder, Sports Corp Limited in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Travel Tuesday, using your vacation to do good.
Lunch money for all generations. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Travel Tuesday. A volunteer vacation, sometimes called voluntourism, is a way to travel while also helping a community. Let's learn more from Angie Rice, co-founder of Boutique Travel Advisors in Scottsdale, Arizona. Find her online at travelbta.com. Angie, thank you for joining us today. And there are a number of examples of a way where you can either build a vacation around a service opportunity or just budget a few days in your itinerary to do some greater good.
I agree. And it definitely adds value to the family experience to be able to give back in destination while you're traveling.
Now, we've talked about this before, and some examples that you've cited are, let's say, you know, maybe there's a doctor or two doctors in a family, and they do go on a trip somewhere in the world, and then 2 or 3 days of that trip are devoted to providing services free of charge to people who live there.
It's great when you can use your expertise to even give back more. So a doctor providing some level of medical services on a volunteer basis, or a lawyer providing some means of reviewing contract documents for a nonprofit in a third world country who doesn't have access to those resources. But there's also ways to do things that really educate and expose you to new opportunities to help the environment through sustainable initiatives. And I'll share with you that there are so many tour operators receiving questions about how can we get involved, how can we volunteer, or even provide financial support. And as a result, hotels and tour operators, cruise lines, and board of tourisms are creating these opportunities for travelers.
And then above and beyond maybe using your own professional expertise to help someone, there are some other opportunities that, let's just say, they're heartwarming as well, like working at an animal sanctuary or volunteering there for a couple of days.
Absolutely. Along with those lines, as we see a lot of emphasis on our environment. For example, the Four Seasons, the Marriott hotels. If you research different hotel properties, you will find that they have programs that allow you to do beach cleanups, reef cleanups, and also some educational opportunities such as saving the turtles. Tourism boards like Costa Rica and Japan, for example, I would say that they do a really, really good job of educating. Going to those websites, you will find information about how you can volunteer when you're traveling. And then one of my other favorites is PAC. You can load up items and you can go to PAC for a Purposes website to find which hotel partners you can support, and you can drop off items at the hotel, whether you're staying there or it's nearby to where you're staying.
Angie Rice, co-founder of Boutique Travel Advisors based in Scottsdale, Arizona. Find her online, travelbta.com. Thank you for joining us today. Still ahead on this Travel Tuesday, we'll take a look at what's happening at Disney theme parks as we head into the new year.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. A ceasefire between Israel and Hezbollah is expected to halt the war in Lebanon soon. The rush is on to get out of town for the Thanksgiving holiday. It's Travel Tuesday, Disney adding to its wide portfolio of attractions. And the holiday season in the workplace could include an avalanche of packages and varying commitments to the task at hand. WBBM Business. The markets are mixed right now. The Dow is down 28 points, NASDAQ up 91, S&P 500 up 23. AccuWeather says, for the rest of today, sunshine mixing with clouds, a cold breeze, and a high around 40. 35 right now under mostly sunny skies at 12:31. Topping our news at the half hour, Israel's Security Cabinet is expected to meet and approve a ceasefire deal with Hezbollah later today. CBS News contributor Robert Berger in Jerusalem reports it could lead to a larger stability in the region.
This ceasefire in Lebanon that's expected could help get a ceasefire in Gaza, because right now Hamas really doesn't have any other active supporters. Hezbollah is a proxy of Iran. Iran may back off. Proxies in Iraq may back off. And the Houthis perhaps leaves Hamas all by itself. And maybe they would be more prone now to negotiate a ceasefire deal that would see the release of about 100 Israeli hostages still left in Gaza.
President Biden and French President Macron will announce the agreement once it's official. O'Hare and Midway filling up with travelers heading to their Thanksgiving destinations. 80 million people, AAA says, will be on the road this weekend. Georgiura Godfrey with the Chicago Department of Aviation says Sunday is projected to be the busiest day of the holiday weekend.
Some people had staggered departures depending on when kids got out of school, when they were able to get out of work. So everybody wasn't leaving on the exact same day. However, when you think about Monday, December 2nd, is back to business as usual. So everybody will be making their way back or heading to their final destinations that day.
A quarter of a million people are expected to pass through O'Hare on Sunday. It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. Markets are mixed, but they're approaching the center line. Let's welcome in Paul Nolte, senior wealth advisor and market strategist with Murphy and Sylvester in Chicago. He's on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home. Paul, thank you for joining us today. And yesterday, there was a great deal of market optimism because the incoming Trump administration picked the Treasury Secretary, who was not necessarily a big fan of tariffs, but then after the market's closed, the incoming Trump administration announced it would introduce tariffs, boosting the duty on Chinese-made goods and also introducing tariffs on products from Canada and Mexico. What is the market reaction to that? Is it they really think this is going to happen, or that investors believe this is merely a negotiating tactic?
Yeah, I think it's really much more of a negotiating tactic. I mean, you go back to Trump administration, and he imposed the tariffs. They weren't as wide sweeping, and they were graduated in over time, so the impact was not nearly as great. It was on products that you don't normally buy all the time, so the impact was minimal. But I think if you take a look at the way Trump operates, it's come out swinging first and land a punch or two, and then let's negotiate. So I'm not sure that, you know, this is the line in the sand that is not going to get crossed. It is merely an opening salvo for a negotiation.
And on top of that, what would that do to some of the agreements that were in the renegotiated NAFTA that was passed and adopted during the first Trump administration?
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's the thing. We don't know how this is all going to play out now that he's introduced Mexico and Canada to the mix. Originally, it was primarily targeted at China, and this is kind of broadened out a little bit. So, again, not quite sure how this is going to play out. It's a negotiating ploy, and we'll see over time how this plays out. But the market right now, really not paying too much attention to it. It is the normal good week that we get during Thanksgiving. News on the tariffs and talk of tariffs, I don't think are really having that type of an impact.
Then, of course, on Friday, we could have a potentially, or at least Friday, or maybe through the early part of next week. I would imagine investors and the markets will be keeping an eye on that first wave of holiday shopping to see if it meets the lofty expectations that that analysts are predicting.
Yeah, I mean, that's normally what a lot of the analysts will do is they'll park themselves out in a mall somewhere and, you know, count cars or traffic coming by and then clicks on Monday for Cyber Monday. But I think what you're going to be seeing so far in the retail sales that we've been experiencing for the last few months is the consumer, in very broad sense, is still doing well. Consumer spending is still pretty good. Consumer confidence is reasonable at this point. So we are seeing the spending going on. Jobs are still there. We're not seeing a huge tick up in unemployment. So for the most part, the consumer is reasonably healthy, and we expect a good Christmas season as a result of that.
And is it, I mean, pending any, you know, sudden outside events, is that going to be the vibe for the rest of this year? A lot of trading on the potential for Trump economic policies in a second term come January, and just overall satisfaction with the direction of the economy.
Yeah, I think so. You know, and we will get a Fed meeting in there. Expectations are for another quarter point rate cut, and were that to come to pass, I think that will, again, talk to the investors about things are on the right path and going along in the right direction. So it's all the more reason to continue to be at least optimistic about the equity market.
Paul Nolte, Senior Wealth Advisor and Market Strategist with Murphy & Silvest in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Travel Tuesday, we'll talk about what's happening at Disney in the coming year.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Travel Tuesday continues, sponsored by Preflight Airport Parking. And there's a lot going on at Disney properties through the end of the year and into 2025. Let's get the scoop from Melissa McAllister, Disney vacation planner at Ticket to Ride in Chicago. Find her on Facebook and Instagram, a dream maker, Melissa. Melissa, thank you for joining us today. And all sorts of interesting things on the Disney menu for the end of this year through 2025, a big anniversary at a Disney theme park. But let's talk about the first Disney cruise ship, which will set sail next month. The Disney Treasure, already a hero, Melissa, because it rescued the crew of that catamaran in the Caribbean not too long ago. So its career is already distinguished, and it's a month away from carrying a paying passenger.
Correct. It is the big, exciting news coming. It will set voyage on December 21st. The Disney Treasure will be a 7-night Eastern and Western Caribbean cruise. The theming is going to be Live the Adventure. So it's going to include Aladdin and Peter Pan and Captain Hook, Lion King, Jungle Book. So all the fun adventures that Disney will bring to life in stories and entertainment, the lounges, the dining, the full gamut will be on this ship.
And you mentioned that the Treasure is doing the kind of the longer Caribbean itineraries. That's because its sister ship, the Wish, which had its maiden voyage a couple of years ago, that's basically doing the shuttle service from Port Canaveral to Nassau to the private island, Castaway Key and back. And it seems like this one's going to be handling the longer itineraries instead of the short 4-night cruise.
Correct, yes. The Western Caribbean is going to hit Cozumel, Grand Cayman, and Jamaica, as well as Disney's private island, Castaway Key. And then the Eastern Caribbean is going to hit Tortola, British Islands, St. Thomas, and the U.S. Virgin Islands, as well as Disney's Castaway Key. So just like you mentioned, it is the sister ship, so it's going to be pretty identical in where everything is laid out. And the theme is going to be different, but overall, the ship is going to look exactly the same.
Now, let's go back to land, and let's go to California. Disneyland next year, it's a big anniversary because the granddaddy of them all, the first park that proved that you could build a major international destination nation out of intellectual property, Disneyland, is turning 70 next year.
Correct. It's a big anniversary. We have not had much information yet coming to us about what they're going to be doing and when the official celebration is going to start, but that should be coming anytime.
And then if you go to Disney World in 2025, there's a new Little Mermaid musical. There are new live shows and new parades. Tell us about the new parade.
Well, that is top secret. They have not given us a lot of information yet on that, but it's going to be starting in June of 2025. We're very excited about this because it's the first nighttime parade coming back to Disney in many, many years, and we definitely need that. It's going to be called Disney Starlight, and there's going to be millions of lights on these floats, and the Disney magic is going to come to life on them.
I'm glad you're keeping that top secret, by the way, Melissa. You don't want Mickey showing up at your door in the middle of the night because you've said too much about the parade coming to Disney World next year. And also, you don't necessarily have to go to a Disney theme park now to take part in the Disney ecosystem, because Disney Adventures will take you anywhere in the world.
It will. Disney Adventures will. You could travel to Africa, Asia, Central America, South America, and Europe. And they offer family guides, and they offer adult travel as well. So now Disney's going into beyond just the theme parks and the cruises.
And one of the interesting, I guess, one of their destinations, one of the tours that Disney can put together for you is the Great Wall of China. And I just had this vision in my head, Melissa, that you go to the Great Wall of China, and all you do is get an autograph from Mulan. It just adds to your princess autograph collection.
That would be the original, of course, yes, if you go to the Great Wall of China. But all these are guided tours, and it's nothing like Disney has ever done before. They are just truly spectacular.
Well, it's very exciting. Of course, we'll keep you busy, I'm guessing, next year, planning out tours for experienced Disney adults or for first-timers.
Correct. Thank you so much.
Melissa McAllister, Disney Vacation Planner, Ticket to Ride in Chicago. Find her online, Facebook and Instagram at Dreammaker Melissa. Join us at this time tomorrow for Personal Finance Wednesday. And still to come, the holidays can present multiple challenges in the workplace.
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
With Thanksgiving just 2 days away and then the following festive period through New Year's ahead, the workplace can be a tough place to navigate. Let's discuss some of the potential pitfalls with Michelle Reisendorf, Chicago jobs expert with the Robert Half Company in Chicago. Michelle, thank you for joining us today. And let's just talk about just the overall vibe between now and the end of the year. And there can be a little bit of second semester senioritis around the office between now and New Year's Eve.
I think that is a great way to describe it. It's certainly a festive time of year. People are very focused on parties and celebrations and kind of year-end wrap-ups. So sometimes, yes, it can be a little challenging to keep people on track.
Now, I at the same time, though, if everybody who works in an office, let's give them the benefit of the doubt. We're all professionals. We're trying to make our goals for the year, potentially land some last-minute deals and get some extra bonus money that can be spent on Christmas presents. So there are some incentives for finishing the year on a strong note.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think the key thing is that, you know, as a manager, you just set some clear expectations about what is required from now through the year end. You know, if you have any deliverable deadlines or projects you must get done, you know, once you communicate that, it gives everybody the flexibility to figure out their schedules to get the work done, but still it certainly enjoy the holidays.
Now, there are some people who may decide that they don't want to ruin the surprise by having their Christmas packages delivered to home, so they have them diverted to the office. It's a sensible policy, Michelle, but like anything, it can be abused. So when it comes to sending your Christmas gifts to the office, how much is too much?
Well, you know, I think you have to think about even one package might be too much, depending on how many employees you have. You know, the thing you have to think about is it definitely creates logistical issues and, you know, overburdened mail rooms. Sometimes there's security concerns. And so, you know, I think it's good for companies to just put out a reminder policy, make sure people aren't over abusing, but certainly understand there might be a package or two that, you know, you want to keep secret.
And also, there's a very good possibility that your building's mailroom was just simply not designed for the Amazon era. It was for envelopes. And remember the big old interoffice memo, Manila envelope with like 7,000 names on it from where it had been in the past. Like, it's not designed for that influx of packages.
No, you know, when we all started work, there wasn't probably Amazon shipping going on like crazy like it is today. And so certainly that overburdened mailroom is a real thing if everybody's shipping their packages.
I was going to say, when I started, we used to like physically, you know, you would get things on audio tape and then physically carry them from one radio station to another. And that was one of my jobs as an intern way back when, was to, you know, walk over to someone else's studio and drop the tape off. And that doesn't exist today.
Nope. I absolutely had the same job in college. I would run literally memos or packages across campus to different offices. And that is no longer too. So yes, it's interesting the difference between yesterday and today.
Michelle Reisdorf, Chicago jobs expert, Robert Half Company. Thank you for joining us today.